Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively into a hot stretch around here. And I don't mean for the Orioles at this point. I have the steamy sun behind me in our YouTube online. We're going to be on Thursday at Steamy, because they steam crabs there. Reader's Crab House will be there on Thursday afternoon. And I put together quite a crab cake tour run here the next couple of weeks, because we got great guests coming Thursday. We're going to be at Deep Pasquale's on July 8th. I'm assuming it's going to be 104. We're going to be down in Canton at the Italian Market. I mean, there are all sorts of rumors about this thing. I mean, Pete Carinci, Dan Roderick, Joe Giordano. It's going to be something. Might have cold cuts before lunchtime if I do that the right way. Probably pasta down at Deep Pasquale's. So we're moving the show around. They have a crab cake there as well. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We have the Back to the Future scratch-offs. On Thursday, we'll be up in Reisterstown. We're going to wish everybody a great 4th. Then we're going to do two shows next week after that. We're going to be also at 1623 in Eldersburg, and we're going to be at Costas in Timonium on the 10th of July, and everybody's lining up for that. They're like, Costas, Timonium, I want to be there. I'm like, don't bring your crab mallet. They don't have crabs at the Costas Timonium. You got to get to Dundalk to get that. This guy and I have had beverages and food in all sorts of places, and the Orioles are home now. I hope you're hydrating appropriately out there at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I don't know what the hottest day I've ever been out there. I can tell you this. Black Jack McDowell pitched in black in 1993, right before the All-Star game. I remember, because I knew Jack pretty well. That was the hottest game I remember. I mean, I remember it being like, 99 at game time, whatever. I don't know how many times it's been triple digits or whatever. I don't go to games anymore. Ask Greg Bader and Mark Fine, if you see them, Mr. Rubenstein, about why you have a seat and I don't. But on a hot night, I should ask you, how hot was it, Luke Jones? It looked really hot. It looked unpleasant. It looks like the next couple are going to be just as unpleasant.
It was hot. There's no question. It was hot,
No
but
AC in the club level in that new the no the new Jim Henneman press box, no? Just like Jim, tough, no AC, right?
I assume the new press box which will be slightly towards the third base side, and it, certainly you'll appreciate it on a
You
night like
think they're going
that.
to put air conditioning in the new press box? I doubt that. I don't know. I'm going to argue that. I'm going to argue that
Why?
point.
I think it's going to be enclosed. If it's going to be enclosed, it's definitely going to have air conditioning. I mean, come on.
Well, they
But
do have Oriole employees sitting in there, so they're trying to take care of their own. I'm just thinking. Okay, go ahead.
it was hot, and according to the Orioles, the last time it was 100 degrees at Camden Yards for a first pitch, it was September 29th, 2012, against Cleveland, also 100 degrees, as I just said. So it was definitely warm, but I'll say this, didn't seem to bother Trevor Rogers too much, who turned in best start of the year for the Orioles, certainly the longest start of the year, 8 shutout innings, career high for him. He had the really good start at Fenway, and he sandwiched those two starts with whatever that was against Tampa Bay last week. So it was good to see him do what he did. The velocity, he carried that well. I mean, I think that's been the biggest thing that's kind of stood out about him in 2025 compared to when the Orioles acquired him at the trade deadline last year. He was around 89 last year. Not impressive. The stuff wasn't playing very well, to the point where the Orioles sent him down after, what, 4 starts. But he was still hitting 93, 94 in the 7th and 8th inning on Monday night. So that was good to see. Fully acknowledging the Rangers don't exactly have a good offense. This is a far cry from the production that the World Series champions of 2 years ago had. But he still navigated that lineup very effectively, and was nice to see him rebound from that lousy outing that he had against the Rays, where he gets an 8-0 lead. And Tony Mancino talked about it a little bit. Was it a case of someone who's desperate to stay in the major leagues? Was pressing and nibbling and trying to be too fine with an 8-0 lead, and that really came back and bit him? Or was it just a matter of settling in and pitching like he's capable of pitching? I mean, we saw this guy be an all-star for the Miami Marlins 4 years ago. I get it; it's 4 years ago. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-star pitcher now, but you'd like to think that there's some middle ground here that he can at least be a useful piece for the Orioles,
When he
and
gives
be.
you 2 starts like he's given you, not the
That's what I'm
bad one, forget
saying.
the bad one.
Right.
When you get 2 good starts like this, you're looking for that every time out. I mean,
Yeah.
this is, you know, and look, I don't think Elias is an idiot. I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy spout. That's the guy down at 105.7 that's lost his mind. You know, that Elias doesn't know baseball and like, I didn't want to hear that, but I think when it comes to pitching for guys' arms falling off and guys being unavailable, signing a pitcher for money, trading for a pitcher with prospects that were very middling in the case of Stowers and Connor Norby when they were given away, and we had other players and Holliday's fine and whatever. Pitching can make you look really stupid, right? I mean, very, very
Yeah.
quickly. I mean, Mike Elias has gotten really dumb, because Batista, Wells, Bradish, I mean, he looked smart because he didn't sign Burns and his arm fell off. So,
Yeah.
like, when you trade for a guy and the guy's not right and he's not healthy and he can't pitch, it takes Mike Elias 10 months, 11 months to wait for a trade to point and say, you guys been calling me stupid about that guy. That guy's capable of that. That's all. I mean, so today I'm not here to praise Elias one way or another.
Sure,
I'm just
sure.
saying that's really tough business you're going to get into. Be like Eric asking Eric DaCosta about drafting wide receivers. You know what he would say? You know what else goes into that? The whole offensive line holding off, and a quarterback that can deliver the ball, and a halfback that can pick up a block, and like all of that has to happen for a wide receiver to be successful. So Eric DaCosta got shat upon for a long time, and Ozzie before that, about the wide receiver thing. The pitching thing in baseball, you can get it right and get it wrong. I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks got it right. They identified an ace, they paid him, they brought him in. He's injured. He got it right last year when he brought Burns in, even if Burns' arm fell off. So, I mean, I think identifying guys who have stuff, talent, ability, success, that doesn't mean anything about tomorrow morning for pitching. In all of sports, pitching.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly difficult, and you're right. I mean this isn't to suggest that the Orioles suddenly won the trade after everyone thought they lost the trade. I mean, who knows? And I'll also say, for as crazy productive and good that Kyle Stowers was the first couple months of the season, look at what he's been in June. Now look at what Connor Norby's been in June. And that doesn't mean those guys stink now, and that the Orioles were made the better side of the trade here. But it just speaks to it's a really difficult evaluation, especially on the pitching side. And in the case of Rodgers, we're going to see what he looks like his next time out. If he gets lit up this weekend and gets knocked around then by the Rays again, then we're going to be talking about him in a different context. But on Monday night, he threw strikes. I thought the change up, establishing that early on, was big for him when you're facing a lineup with nine right-handed bats. He did that, but I mean, I think the big thing that just stands out is the stuff's a lot better than it was last August when he arrived. And, he had okay numbers for the Marlins. Remember, he got off to a bad start, and then he had a run of, before the Orioles acquired him, I think he had been pretty good statistically anyway, over his last eight starts with the Marlins.
But he
But you
felt
just.
fit and healthy when they brought him in. They brought him in to pitch in a pennant race last year.
Yeah,
That's.
right. And he just wasn't that. I mean, the stuff was a far cry. I mean, it was a shell. He was a shell of what he had been in 2021 when, he was averaging more than a strikeout per inning. He was I think he had a 2.6 ERA. I mean, that was his rookie year. He was second in NL Rookie of the Year voting back in 21. So I think the Orioles said, okay, even if maybe that was a little bit of a fluke that he was that great as a rookie, that shows there's ability in there that we can acquire this guy, make a couple tweaks, and think that he can be, I don't know, a back half of the rotation starter for us. I mean, not an ace or
Well, he
anything like
talked about
that.
club control when he got him. You know, I
Sure.
mean, that was something that he would pitch in 2025, 26, right?
Oh, no question. I mean, that was obviously a big part of it. I mean, the one thing that we talked about, whether you like the trade deadline moves or not, was they acquired Zach Eflin with the idea that it wasn't just for last August and September. They had him for 2025.
Well, the
Same.
rental was Burns. Burns was the rental.
Exactly. But their deadline moves last year, again, whether you like them or not, and clearly there was plenty to dislike about what they did at the trade deadline last year when it was Eflin, Dominguez, Gregory Soto. there was also an eye toward 2025 with those moves. So,
For better or worse. Right.
in all those
Exactly.
cases, but
Exactly. It
exactly.
replenished their pitching at the deadline with current major league pitchers, which is something that we have beaten the snot out of them
Sure.
because they haven't drafted any of them. So they
Sure.
have to get them from other places and they have to give up to get that. And what they gave up was something they couldn't use for a pitcher that they believe would be a contributor. I don't think anybody thought he's going to be their number two starter and that they're going to have to give him $80 million 2 years from now to
No.
pitch for 3 more years. But that would be a good problem to have if he pitches that well, if he's capable of what he did in Miami a couple of years ago. And certainly, based on Monday night, an 101 degree night, if you can do it there, I guess. I mean, I. And what else? What do they got to lose? They're a last place team at this point. Everybody else is banged up and injured. He's going out and taking the hill. Now, 2 1/3 with 9 hits and 75 pitches, walking everybody, like all of that. That's not going to play, but we'll see that again, I'm sure, right? I mean, I think maybe one of the things with this dude's like Eboldo Jimenez, he'll just be inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean that's a lot of pitchers are like that, right? So we're going to see how he fares in his next time out. And again, I thought Tony Mancelino had a pretty interesting perspective in kind of sizing up what Trevor Rogers did at Fenway back in May, right? I mean that kind of jump started the Orioles being on this stretch that they're on, where that they've been better over the last month, right? I mean it kind of started with a Trevor Rogers pitching the way he did in the nightcap of that doubleheader at Fenway. He goes back down, comes back up last week. He's staked to an 8-0 lead. And Mancelino, I thought he it was a very honest assessment of what you kind of want from a pitcher when your team jumps out to an 8-0 lead. You want that guy to go 6 innings, even if he ends up giving up 4 runs in the process. He gives you 6 innings, he maintains the lead, he turns it over to the bullpen late, and you still have a 4-run lead. Like, you'll take that. You'll take that 10 times out of 10, especially with an unproven pitcher. But instead, Trevor Rogers being the guy that at this point is fighting for his major league life, in terms of not that he's going to be released tomorrow or anything like that, but in terms of trying to stay in the majors. So he was staked to an 8-0 lead and tried to be way too fine, tried to be way too perfect, tried to be excellent to the point where he's thinking, oh, the Orioles, I need to stay, right? I don't want to be optioned back to Norfolk. And sometimes that can be good. Sometimes that can blow up in your face, and it blew up in his face. And the Orioles ended up losing as a result. Obviously a disastrous loss on the road trip. But he came out on Monday night. Like I said, I think getting some change up, getting a little, he didn't get a lot of swing and miss with the change up, but I think that was a pitch that was effective enough for him. When you're a lefty facing a lineup full of right-handed bats, you've got to have something that's going to play that you can then, you mix in both your fastballs and your sweeper. And he did that. It wasn't this dominant performance in terms of like blowing hitters away all night, but it was very, it was efficient, obviously, when you go 8 innings. And he kept them off balance. There was not a whole lot of hard contact, a couple balls squared up here and there, but he, I mean, 3 hits over 8 innings, right? I mean, 4 strikeouts. That's not a lot, but he got enough swing and miss, and I think he really mixed his pitches. I thought the sequencing was good. He was very complimentary of Chadwick Trump behind the plate, for whatever that's worth. It's nice to see that you have a battery that, isn't necessarily overly familiar with each other, in the sense that they've played together 3 years or anything like that, but it worked. And like I said, it also helps that the Rangers have one of the worst offenses in baseball. I mean, they've been more disappointing offensively than the Orioles even.
Well, and quit the swing too, by the way. You
Yeah.
get a game over 2 hours and 7 minutes, it happens, right?
And you and everyone who's there in person is glad when it's 2 hours, 8 minutes, with how hot it was. But again, good performance for him. Great to see it. For the Orioles, what it means is it's another option, right? Until he goes out and struggles his next time out, right? I mean, you're only as good as your next time out. So that's going to be the challenge for him. But hey, 8 shutout innings for anyone, anyone in this rotation, you'll gladly take that. And I haven't had a chance to talk to him a whole lot because, I mean, he hasn't been on the major league roster much, right? Remember, 4 starts last year and then optioned. he was hurt during spring training and got, had a late start to the season. So it's not as though we've seen him in Baltimore a whole lot. But he seems like a guy that really wants to do well. Seems like a guy that has acknowledged that what happened to him last year and over the offseason and all that, he acknowledged it. It shook his confidence. So it's good to see him back in a place where he seems he's in a much better place physically because the stuff looks way better. And now he's getting an opportunity. And, it's been two really good starts and a bad start. But, you kind of look at the net result. It's a 1.6 ERA over three starts. And the two games he pitched well, the Orioles won. So you'll gladly take that, even if, he might still be prone to a clunker here and there.
Well, we'll say, remember the night he blew the 8-0 lead, or remember the night that he pitched 8 innings on a 101-degree night? So, Luke Jones is here. And by the way, I did look up the date because the internet gives, not just AI, but it gives. The date was July 11, 1993. And this is the hottest game I remember attending at Camden Yards. The Orioles lost 11-5 to Chicago White Sox. What a lineup, though. Like, I'm looking at this. It was 95 at game time, by the way. So it was only 95. It was on July. It was right before the All-Star game. It was the day before Juan Gonzalez and Ken Griffey were hitting the warehouse and hitting the second deck, and Greg Biagini was throwing juice baseballs at those guys back in the day. But that particular day, I looked at the lineup, and I'm like, I thought it was a nothing game. And I do remember I was sitting on a bunch of tickets in the outfield for that game. I'd been on the radio a year and a half, and David Cope was the Orioles' marketing guy, and had given me some tickets to give away in contests during the course of the year. And I had tickets for that day because it was a big thing before it was All-Star weekend. You could come down and go to Fan Fest. I'm sure you did that with your father at some point that weekend because everybody did. I did it with my kid. But how about this lineup for the White Sox? You ready for this? You'll remember the Oriole lineup easily. Steve Sax, Tim Raines, Frank Thomas, Ellis Burks, Robin Ventura, Bo Jackson was
I was
on
going to
that
say,
team.
Bo Jackson was on that
Bo
team.
Jackson was that. Lance Johnson, Ron Carkowice, Ozzie Guillen. And I told you Jack McDowell started that game. I remember that. And Roberto Hernandez, who later elbowed Cal Ripken in the nose at the All-Star game in Chicago
96,
2 years
yeah.
ago, right? 2 years later, 3 years later. Harold Baines was in that game. Harold Reynolds, Mark McLemore, Mike Devereaux, Harold Baines, Cal Ripken, Chris Hoyles, my dear friend David Segee, Brady Anderson, and Tim Hewlett, one of the real good dudes. Jamie Moyer made the start there, the first of many. Jim Poole, Todd Froworth, the late great Jim Poole and Todd Froworth, you lost both of them. Brad Pennington, my pal, and Otter Greg Olson came in. So there's your that was the hottest day I remember, and I'm telling you, the White Sox were wearing those black jerseys. So it made me feel hotter just watching them wear those black jerseys at that time.
No question about it. No question,
But the
but
Heat's the story this week. I mean, it's gonna be just as bad on Tuesday, just as bad on Wednesday. We sort of knew this going in last week. I didn't think that would play faster baseball. I thought that would make for more ball going over the fence kind of thing. It clearly didn't on Monday night so far. But I don't know that we see the ballpark play hot like this or how it plays because it's not 100 degrees very often around here. It isn't. Even though Buck Showalter made some allegations on Sunday about how soupy Baltimore could be.
I mean, it's there's hot, there's Baltimore hot, and then there's this, right? I mean, as I was driving home on the JFX, my car thermometer, and this was 10 o'clock on Monday night, 9:45, whatever it was. I mean, it was on the JFX. My car thermometer still said like 93 at that point, right? I mean, you're talking about late at night, and you're still in the mid 90s, so it was definitely hot. And when it's that hot, and what I guess the dew point and the humidity, all of that combined, it can get to a point where it's the air's so hot that the ball might not travel quite as well as like when it's, I don't know, 95, conventional hot, 93 conventional hot. But I'll say this, I mean, Jackson Holliday got into
Got a
one,
hold.
and we saw him have a big night, a 3-run homer, drove in another run. I mean, 4 RBIs for him. And I thought that my other takeaway, and tis the season, all-star voting, right? I mean, Ryan O'Hearn's leading at DH, and Jackson Holliday's right there at second base. But Tony Mancelino was asked about the potential for Jackson Holliday to be an all-star. And I thought he gave a really interesting answer. He was not dismissive of it, but not as worried about the all-star element. And I'll let me pull up his quote because I mean this was verbatim. This was not him, alluding to this. This was literally what he said when asked about Jackson Holliday potentially going to the All-Star game. He says, quote, "When I look at Jackson, I'm not concerned about the All-Star thing right now. It's like, how do we get this kid to be one of the top five players in the game by 2027? That's how I look at Jackson." Now, you can look at that one of two ways. You can say, "Wow, thanks for not putting too much pressure on the kid or anything." Or you can look at it through the lens of that's how much they think of this guy. And that's how excited they are about the improvement he's made from his age 20 season, which let's all call a spade a spade. He wasn't ready, certainly wasn't ready in April.
Adley
And then,
Rutschman was at Oregon State at that point in his life,
oh,
right?
of course. I mean, all, you know, I mean, Gunnar Henderson at age 20, he would have been what at Bowie? At that point in time, I mean, and Gunner did make his debut at 21. So,
Well, we all wanted to give Rutschman the money when it was John Angelos's, and then when Moneybags bought the team, we're like, we want to give the money to Gunnar Henderson because he's going to hit 35 home runs. You think Kowser's going to hit the ball? I think Westberg's going to hit the ball.
Holiday might be the best out
Holiday's
of
going to be
all
the
of
guy
them.
that's going to get 400 million, maybe. Maybe
Might
he's the guy
be.
that they get into. I don't know. They're all 1-1s. They're all
Sure.
one somethings. They're
Sure.
all and Henderson's not even one of those guys. He was the next version of that. He wasn't Kerstad or Kowser on draft day, at least,
Right.
right? Because of his age. And we have lost sight of all of this quality talent in regard to the last place nature of this ball
Yeah.
club over the last 3 months, because we were kissing all of their asses in Sarasota on March 15th. You and I are up in Toronto. I'm bleeding from the leg, eating egg sandwiches, freezing our ass off up there. We had no thought that we had thought that Holliday might make it, might not make it, but we didn't know the team wasn't going to make it this year. The team hasn't made it this year to post, really.
Yeah, I mean, they're still 10 games under 500, right? I mean, they're in a spot now, and I wrote about this at BaltimorePositive.com. I mean, this is they have six series, including this series against the Rangers. They have six series to go into the All-Star break. They entered Monday night 11 games under 500. I view it through the lens of if you want to have any discussion or nuance about the trade deadline, to me, you need to go 12-6 and be at worst, 5 games under 500 at the All-Star break, right? Then it's like, okay, you've got I think they have 14 games after that. And
You're
then,
showing progress. Then you're
right,
13 over since the bottom, wherever the bottom was, right?
exactly. So that's where we are right now. But essentially, you need to win each of these six series until
Well,
the
and you're going
All-Star
to
break.
point to Kowser. You're going to point to Westberg. You're going to point to Trevor Rogers. You're going to point to
It's
the
go
guys that
time.
weren't around in April and say, how are they performing now? And that's where, Eflin's a concern right now,
Sure.
right? The bullpen's.
Sagano.
I mean, they have some concerns here every other day. Not that Trevor Rogers is a sure thing by any stretch of the imagination. It feels like Kramer takes the ball every fifth day. That's good, much more than Grayson Rodriguez could say. But I'm with you. I mean, this you and
It's
I get
go.
at this every single morning. We come at it. I get a cup of Zeke's coffee, and we sit here and go at it for half an hour, 45 minutes. And they've really not. The winning streak aside, they haven't really shown any signs of real life that there's momentum for any of this. And momentum comes when you get pitching. I mean, I'll just say that out loud.
Yeah.
Momentum doesn't come when you're winning 11-9 every night, like they dreamed this up back in March. Momentum comes when you get quality pitching.
Well, it's quality pitching, but they also need to swing the bats the way that they were designed to. And look, how much of that is Mike Elias? How much of that is the young players? How much of that is coaching? Yes. Yes to all of it, right? I mean, it can be more than one thing. But yeah, you kind of look at, first of all, they are 18-10 since they started 16-34. That's a good record, right? I mean, we all would acknowledge they played better over the last month. There's no question about that. But when you start to break it down, they had the six-game winning streak. Since the six-game winning streak, I think they're 9-8. I believe that kind of speaks to you were hoping that the six-game winning streak would be what would really catapult them to really go on an extended tear. And it's been okay since then, right? I mean, 9-8 is nothing to panic over or nothing to say you're terrible, but it also isn't suggesting that you're this juggernaut that's ready to explode. And I think that's where we most of us are at this point. when I'm still talking in terms of what they need to do by the All-Star break, does that mean I'm expecting that? Does that mean I'm predicting that's going to happen? No, I'm trying to present what the pathway is for them to not be a seller at the trade deadline. Do I think they're going to be a seller at the trade deadline? Yeah, because I'm guessing they're probably not going to go 12-6 over, or I guess at this point now, 11-6
Well,
over the
and that's
final
your point.
17
If they're
teams.
8 under .500 or 6 under .500 or whatever at the All-Star break, or
I
four
mean, then
under,
it's.
whatever it is, and they become a seller, expect it to get worse, right? As a season for
Well,
wherever it is. If you start getting rid of Sagano, getting rid of Eflin because they've turned
yeah.
things around, I mean, that's where this is a really weirdly complex season for them because I've been on the air 35 years. They haven't had a lot of years like this. Because you know
Yeah.
what? In 35 years of doing this, their talent has always been dog shit. I mean, like, literally, they've never had young talent to look at how's next year going to be. I mean, when they had Ripken and Alomar and Palmieri, that's a different
I mean
animal when you stink at the All-Star break, but they haven't had upside like this. You know, you could talk about Machado maybe or that era
Yes,
for a minute and a half.
that era, yes, because you had Machado, you had Jonathan Scope, Matt Wieters was supposed to be the next Johnny Bench. You had Nick Markakis established at that point. You had Adam Jones. So they had it. Was it as long of a window as you would have liked? No, of course not. But they had that. What, even from about 2009, we started talking in those terms. They had the cavalry, whether it panned out or not.
But I don't
So,
know, man.
but
In
yeah.
Rutschman and in Henderson and in
Oh,
Holiday, it feels
this
like
is
they have
definitely
Hall of
different.
Fame kind of talent. I don't know that anybody ever looked at Adam Jones that way. I think we looked at Wieters that way for a minute and a half.
I mean,
Nobody ever looked
Machado.
at Markakis that way. I think they thought Markakis could be a nice player, but I don't think any of them showed this top five player in the game, Mike Trout, you know, wherever that
Machado
is.
did. Machado definitely did. And again, it's because of the age, right? I mean, you're
Okay.
talking about when someone comes up at age 20 or 21, which is why Jackson Holliday, and to a lesser extent, but still because he's still only 23, Gunnar Henderson. I mean, we think about Gunnar Henderson in these terms that. That he's this established guy now and has been here 3 years. He's still, he's getting ready to turn 24, right? I mean, he's still young. He's still, I don't want to say ascending in terms of like that he's going to be better than he was the first half of last year when he was at his best, but he's still a player who is still trying to get better against left-handed pitching, still trying to play a more, a steadier shortstop, right? Trying to determine if he's going to stay at shortstop long term, in terms of say 5 years from
Well,
now,
that's the
10
weird part
years from
about
now.
Holiday's making it look easy all of a sudden, right? I mean, the game looks easier for Jackson Holiday right now.
I mean, he's having a really solid, and it's not as though he has these unbelievable numbers where you say, oh my gosh, this, but he's playing really well, right? I mean, he's been steady. I mean, Mancelino, the other thing that he had to say in the post game was he just kind of said, look, I think I'm leaving Jackson Holliday in the leadoff spot. I just want him. I think he's going to profile to be that kind of player, and we don't want to mess with him, and we want him to hit leadoff. He made mention how what recently I guess they dropped him down to sixth. I guess it was when they faced Max Fried, right? Or no, maybe it was Scooble. He might have still hit leadoff against Max Fried. I'm trying. My dominant lefties are running together here as I'm trying to assess this. But the point is, he even said that. Even against lefties, he feels compelled to just leave him in the leadoff spot. So it's
Well, how
good
do we
to see.
project on him? He's going to hit 22 home runs, right? I mean,
Ooh, Holiday? I mean,
he's
I
going to hit
think.
22 home runs. He's hitting .265 right now. I think he'll be a .280 hitter. I think he'll be a .300 hitter
I
at
mean,
20, you know, in 2027, right? What is that projection then? I don't know. You project him to hit more than 20 home runs, but man, he's got torque on. You know, I got Fred Lynn coming on this week, and you know, this guy's got a Joe Morgan kind of movement about him with quick twitch and being able to hit the ball because he's not a big guy, Jackson Holliday, right?
I mean, he certainly has put muscle on, but yeah, I mean, he's not this 6 foot 4. He's not Cal Ripken. He's not Kobe Mayo in terms of just being like a really huge guy. But I think, for me, a couple things really stand out. I mean, and obviously the power is on the come, and he's going to hit home runs. Is he going to become a 40 home run guy? I don't really see that
20
necessarily,
home runs,
but I
40
think,
doubles, a couple of
right.
triples.
I think that's what you look at. He could be a 20, 25 home run guy with 40 or 45 doubles. I mean, that's That's a serious profile right there, especially for a second baseman.
Probably going to steal 20
But I
bases.
think, you know, the stole he has stolen some bases, but he doesn't have a very good percentage. You know, when you look at his percentage, it's right around 50%. You want to be up at 80% if you're going to be a regular base stealer, because if it's anything less than that, then it's a losing proposition. You're actually hurting your team.
Well,
You know, if
stealing bases includes getting walks and singles to get to first
and
base,
I
right?
think
He didn't walk a lot.
well, and see, that's what's interesting for me. That's the next step for him. He is known for having a great eye. I think you would find that he doesn't chase a whole lot. Like, you look at his profile and you would say, oh, okay, well, he's hitting 265, but his on-base percentage is only 313. So it tells you right there, without looking at the raw numbers, that he's not walking a whole lot. But I think you would also look and say, but he doesn't chase a ton, right? He's not necessarily he's swung at the first pitch a lot, but generally speaking, he's been very effective doing that. It's not as though he's chasing and swinging at pitches out of the strike zone on the first pitch. So I think what you're seeing here, and this is what happens with young players, you will find so many different minor league hitters have great on-base percentage, even guys that don't really profile as serious prospects, because they do have a good eye, and they're facing pitching in the minor leagues that doesn't have the command that major league pitching has. You get to the major leagues, and if you don't hit the ball with authority and you don't have a profile that's going to translate to being a bona fide major league hitter, they're not going to respect you. They're going to come right at you. They're going to eat you alive. I mean, I don't want to pick on this guy because there's no reason to. I don't have an axe to grind here, but Terran Vavra is an example of this. Go look at his early minor league numbers. I mean, he had a huge on-base percentage. Problem is, he doesn't have any thump in his bat. So he gets to the major leagues, or even, you know, gets to triple A, let's say, but especially the majors when he's been here, albeit in a limited sample, pitchers just come right at him. There's no fear. So that on base skill that you have, I mean, they're just coming right after you, you know, and you can try to work the count and all you want, but then you're down 0-1. You're down 1-2 a whole lot. So, and I think that was Jackson Holliday last year. Now that you're seeing him establish himself as someone who has a bona fide serious hit tool, that I think you're going to see pitchers slowly but surely start to be a little more careful with him, especially knowing how apt he is to swing at the first pitch with it when it's a good strike to do some damage on. You're going to see them start to be more careful against him. It's going to be more 1-0 counts. Those 1-0 counts turn into 2-0 or 2-1, and he starts working the count a little bit more. And I think you're going to start to see the walks start to come up here. I think that's going to be, when you look at his profile now, and look, he's been a very valuable player as
He
he's
hits the
played
ball, they're going to
this
pitch
year.
around him, right?
They will get to a point where pitchers are, and of course, it's going to depend who's hitting behind him, all of that, right? I mean, that all of that applies for any hitter. But I think the next step for him is you'll see that start to become a bigger part of his profile. And when he does that, right now he has, you know, he's a 730, 740, a couple weeks ago his OPS was probably like 750. That's when you'll see his OPS start to jump to, he's an 800 OPS kind of guy, an 820 OPS kind of guy. If he can do that, you know, as a second baseman, and still, 21 years old, man, you're talking about someone who profiles to be, maybe not a top five player in baseball, as Tony Mancelino suggested, but that's a perennial all-star kind of profile at second base. So they're clearly excited about where Jackson Holliday is. And let's face it, Nestor, Monday night is not necessarily a signal that they're going to go on the kind of run that is required of them to be in the race and not be sellers at the trade deadline and all that. But if you're looking at this through the lens of what I've been saying from the moment that, they started in this disastrous fashion, if you're looking at it through the lens of trying to get your young core right, when Jackson Holliday hits a home run and has four RBIs, and even though Trevor Rogers isn't part of the young core per se, but he's still a 27-year-old pitcher who they acquired last year, who they clearly liked and thought they could do some tweaking with. When he pitches the way that he did on Monday night, Monday night was a good night, if you're the Orioles and you're an Orioles fan, not just in terms of, the Hail Mary of getting back into the race here, but in terms of what it can mean for next year, right? With Jackson Holliday doing what he's doing and Trevor Rogers doing what he did on Monday night, I mean, that was good to see that, regardless of whether it's going to mean that they're going to go on the kind of run they need to save 2025 in any meaningful way. Nights like Monday night, you want to see the rest of the year, right? You want to see that. You want to see Kobe Mayo break out, and you know, I'm glad to see him just play. I mean, one of my pet peeves that
I
I
want to
kind of
see him hit more than 196 is what I want to see.
No question. You know what I'll also say? I wrote about this. I was a little peeved about the road trip. Kobe Mayo last homestand against the Angels. He had a multi-hit game that Saturday, and he had an RBI double that Sunday. You know, he arguably his two best days as a pro at the plate, as a major leaguer at the plate. He started one game in Tampa. Then Friday night he plays, had two more hits. Did not start Saturday or Sunday. Only played Saturday when Jordan Westberg exited the game. And don't get me wrong, this isn't me saying that Kobe Mayo needs to play every day, even if he's 0 for his last 40 with 25 strikeouts. That's not what I'm saying. But when he does have a good performance, can we play him the next day? Right? Is that too much to ask? I mean, this guy is supposed to be the second best prospect in your system. He's young. He's still very young.
You stink. Mountcastle's hurt.
Right. I mean, it's just like when he plays well, reward him by playing him the next day, right? And that's, again, this isn't me saying that Ramon Urías should never play or Dylan Carlson should never play. No, I'm not saying that. But when Kobe Mayo finally looks like he's starting to gain some traction and the at-bats are starting to look a little bit better, he's not striking out quite as much, then play him a few days in a row, right? I mean, so that was something that bugged me on the road trip. And you know, I understand that sounds more like a development thing, but let's face it, it's not like this lineup has been murderer's row this year. So when you have a young player who is trying to gain confidence and trying to establish himself, when he has a good game or two in a row, then let it ride for a few days, right? Let him see if he can get on a roll. Instead, he started one game against the Rays in that four game set, and one game, you know, two starts on a 7-game road trip on the heels of him looking better than he had looked, you know, certainly. You know, I was disappointed by that. So, you know, and I get it. You know, it's he had a hit on Monday night, but it was a bloop. I'm not saying it was anything overly impressive, but you've got this runway now. I mean, Mountcastle, they just put on the 60-day IL. He's not going to be back till August, you know, at best. But, you know, play the kid. You know, play him 5 days a week, right? I mean, he doesn't have to start every single game, but there's no reason he shouldn't be playing at least four out of five, you know,
Seems to me
four or
they look at
five games.
pitching matchups in these series, and they just there are certain times they like Urías, there are certain times they really like Laureano,
I
and
mean,
Laureano's been a guy that, I mean, look, they're a last place
he's been
team
great.
and all and whatever, but we beat Elias up. I mean, they needed him on this team.
No, Laureano's been a great, for $4 million, he's been a great
They
signing.
didn't need Tyler O'Neill on this team, but they
Well,
needed Laureano.
they needed the version of Tyler O'Neill that he has not been, right? I mean, he's starting his rehab assignment again, and we'll see what happens there. And by the way, Tyler O'Neill, year one, it's been a total disaster, right? I mean, we all know that. Does that mean Tyler O'Neill year two is going to be a disaster? I mean, we'll see, right? I mean, just like we were talking about Trevor Rogers in way different terms suddenly
Yeah,
than
you
we
pay a guy
were.
$20 million a year, you think you plug him in, you're going to get 25 home
No
runs. You know what I
question.
mean? Like,
But he has an injury history. I mean, this was as much as, look, I'm not saying he was the right guy to do this with. And I'm not going to sit here and defend the move and say that I loved when they signed Tyler O'Neill. I understood what they were looking for when they signed Tyler O'Neill. But we also, many of us that have been critics of Mike Elias at different times, and I'm talking nuanced criticism here, not just always stinks, he's dumb, he doesn't know what he's doing, right? You know, there's middle ground here. We can acknowledge Mike Elias has done some really good things, and we can acknowledge some things that haven't been very good, quite frankly, especially the last couple of years. But in the case of Tyler O'Neill, we've heard a lot of people say that, oh, Elias is risk averse and he needs to take a few more chances. He took a chance with Tyler O'Neill. Problem is, that was the wrong guy to take the chance with because he has had the extensive injury history. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to get back at some point. And I'm, you know, whether it's this year or, you know, next year, because he's not going to opt out. I mean, I think we all understand that now. So can he still be a productive player for the Orioles the next couple of years? I mean, he can be, but he's got to get healthy, right? Just like all these pitchers, right? I mean, Kyle Bradish may be the ace of the staff next year. You can't plan on that, but he could be. He's certainly capable. We've seen it. We've seen that guy be absolutely dominant. They
What you'd
can't.
like to see is Rutschman, Mayo, Kowser, Westberg, all of these guys on the field at the same time, all in the lineup as promised 2, 3 years ago, and
And
having commensurate pitching, whatever that is, whatever money bags needs to come up with in the offseason, whatever they need to deal Sam Bassaio
sure.
off to get the next Corbin Burnes, whatever they're going to do, they have to have pitching to do what they did 2 years ago. And that's where I am on that. And for
Sure.
me, that's an everyday job. And based on seeing Cal Ripken and his Iron Man, the bobblehead, he did an inning in the Masson booth last night. They asked him about ownership, and he gave 3 sentences about it. At some point, there's going to be accountability for all these people. That's all I'm saying. And I'll break it off at that because you got another 101 degree night tonight. You got 101 degree night tomorrow. Luke's at the ballpark all week long because I like to make him suffer through last place baseball and 100 degree nights. I'm going to be over at Reader's Crab House on Thursday. That will be happening with our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Coppin State and Liberty Pure Solutions and Curio Wellness. I'll be giving away the scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. We got a big week around here just in general. 4th of July is next week. We're doing crab cake tours. I'm doing a 27th anniversary. I'm working on the 27th logo. I have the 26 oyster here. We're going to have a 27 up beginning August 3rd. We're going to be dining at our 27 favorite places to eat and our 27 favorite things to eat because people have asked me, hey, where's the best crab cake? So I got places that I've never mentioned on social media, places I've never mentioned online, places I've never mentioned here on the air that I go and I munch and I eat. And I'm going to be sharing that in August for fun because the Orioles are in last place and Ravens don't play until Buffalo, September 7th. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.